Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. I'm Katie Pigden, the editor of the publication. In recent weeks, I have been delighted to hand you over to another member of the Money Marketing editorial team, but I'm afraid this week you are stuck with me waffling on about why we need to put protection back on the agenda. Enjoy. One of the reasons I'm happy to pay a monthly fee on my Building Society account is because it comes with worldwide travel and mobile phone insurance. I haven't exactly done much travelling lately, but it's nice knowing it's one less thing to worry about when I do book my next trip abroad, or even in the UK for that matter. No one wants to think about something going wrong on their holiday, but of course it can and does happen, so it's important for people to be protected. I was due to go to Sri Lanka last summer, but 2020 had different ideas for us all. A friend of mine who is from there has been building a house back in his home country and asked me to come and visit. He was going to be my tour guide and had a whole itinerary planned out. It's something we have talked about for many years. We used to work together and he would often say, "When I build my house back home, you must come and visit." I certainly had no objections. As the years passed, he would show me photos of the land he'd purchased and then the foundations being put in place. Suddenly, the building was really starting to take shape and the prospect of an exciting holiday was getting closer. Finally, all the inside decorating was complete and I received a photo of a beautiful room ready and waiting for my arrival. We discussed dates and then I booked a block of annual leave and the flights and we were good to go. Yet within a matter of weeks, the holiday started to look less likely. Fortunately, I managed to get a full refund on the plane tickets. The airline had tried to offer an incentive for a booking later down the line. It was all just too risky at that stage, so getting my money back seemed the best option. The holiday dates came and went. I still took the annual leave from work, but my small garden didn't quite live up to what I had been hoping for. Still, that was the least of my worries that year. Worse things were to come down the line. In my last weekend essay, I spoke about losing my dad and my experience of dealing with various financial firms. One thing I left out was that while going through his paperwork, I had discovered my dad had been paying for some kind of health insurance policy for many years. Suddenly, he stopped paying it, though, and there was no cover in place when he died. I don't remember him ever talking to me about this policy or why he had decided it wasn't worth it. I do remember that he kept meaning to get round to taking out life insurance and would often joke about what free gift he might sign up for after seeing several adverts while watching daytime TV. He never got round to taking out such a policy. My dad had several jobs over the years, some he talked of more fondly than others. I mentioned his news agent before and his time at W.H. Smith, but he started out as a young postman and then became a bus conductor. He loved his time on the buses, and I often asked him to recount stories from back then. One thing that obviously stood out to him was the food and what great meals you could get rather cheaply in the staff canteen. There was talk of a factory job when he lived outside of London for a few years. He really didn't seem the type of thing I could imagine my dad doing. And he would frequently say he had no idea how he got the job or what he was even doing in it. There is one job I wish I'd found out more about, though. Every now and again, I heard snippets of some kind of door-to-door salesman job he had. It was selling a type of insurance product. I can't be sure what type. Possibly life insurance, but don't quote me on it. He hated it, and therefore didn't spend quite so much time talking about it. I don't think he even lasted long in the job. I remember him saying how difficult it was to sell something that people couldn't see or hold in their hands. I hadn't thought about it much until recently when I took over as editor of Money Marketing and decided we should try to build up the publication's protection coverage. I wish my dad had got to see me make the step up. When the opportunity arose, I did question if it was the right time. I wasn't sure I could cope. I was still trying to come to terms with what had happened. I still am. There's so many things I want to ask him. The insurance job is just one of the more random items on a long list. And yet I spoke to my dad most days. He probably would have had no interest in telling me more about what the role involved and may not have even remembered much about it. I wish we'd had a few more serious conversations about money too. When I did start telling him about financial advisors, he said he didn't need one as he had me. My knowledge is nowhere near that of the professionals. I still have lots to learn and will never be up to the standard of an advisor. I hadn't realised it, but I guess I had over the years helped get my dad's finances in some kind of order, although far from perfect. I was blown away by the reaction I received from the piece on why we need to be better at talking about death and money. Some went as far as to say I should write a book. It was something my dad used to tell me to do. I've never felt I have a book in me, though, but I guess we all have a story to tell. Never say never. I was even contacted by some providers, and they explained the processes they had in place to support people going through a bereavement, and even the services to support their own staff, who, let's face it, may also be affected by the stories they hear. After all, they are human too. With some firms, I discussed the image of insurance companies and how, try as they might, it seems difficult to show the good of the industry. There seems a misconception that insurance doesn't pay out, yet claim stats tell a different story. Some companies offering life insurance and income protection asked me how they might look to improve the reputation of the industry. How can they get the positive stories out there? I explained that, in my opinion, things need to be simplified as much as possible. People are put off by things they don't understand, and no one wants to be made to feel stupid. The sad fact of the matter is, often bad things make for good stories for a journalist. So yes, sometimes those will be the things national media and even trade press pick up on. When I worked on a local newspaper, I remember on a slow news day, one of the editors shouted across the newsroom, "We need a good murder." What a horrible thought. There's no such thing as a good murder. I don't even think they meant it. It was a flippant remark. Yet if there was a murder in the town, that was more than likely to be the front page splash as opposed to the nice positive community story. It's always been the way. Things don't have to be that extreme to get coverage, though. Maybe explaining exactly why the small percentage of claims weren't paid out will go some way in helping the situation and to debunk some myths. I'm not saying it will get covered, yet reinforcing the message can't hurt. It might not be overly exciting, but could help validate that genuine claims more often than not are paid out. And real life stories help too. Case studies showing the situations people were in so others can relate. There have been a few stories appearing in a certain national newspaper lately, which could be seen to suggest some protection products are not worth the premiums. Or more so, the journalist in question has given that impression when sharing the stories on social media. It was great to see the advice profession come out in force and explain the other side and where the articles or tweets may have missed the mark. Insurance and protection products are not perfect. Improvements have been made and companies are working on making things easier to understand. We do need to try and remove some of the complexity. I have life insurance, but I am lacking when it comes to critical illness and income protection, something I need to get sorted. When my husband and I were applying for our mortgage, we had a chat with one broker about some cover. With so much uncertainty around buying our first home and moving to a new area, we wanted to ensure our finances settled down to know exactly what our outgoings would be. After the meeting, we managed to find the same life insurance policies at a cheaper rate and got that in order. But truth be told, we looked at each other rather blankly when the broker discussed the other forms of protection. The definitions of critical illnesses concerned us. No one wants to get anything on that dreadful list, but the worry was more if we were to get something that didn't meet the criteria exactly. Where would we stand then? Progress has been made on this since. I'm surprised we haven't dealt with the matter though. One of our reasons or excuses for not purchasing it was because we currently don't have any dependents. Why we didn't think we should do it for ourselves and each other is beyond me. When I worked with my former colleague in the head office of a luxury shirt company, we would advise customers to pay for insurance if they were returning goods to us, should anything happen to the parcel in transit or never reach us at all. I was certainly no expert in insurance then, I'm still not, but was slightly taken aback when one customer asked for the insurance to be refunded as the parcel had reached us safely. I explained that's not how it works. The insurance is there for peace of mind more than anything. Me and my husband should know better. While most of us do not want to hide away from talking about death and something terrible happening to us, we are not naive to it. My husband Matt is a research scientist working on devastating conditions such as motor neuron disease and dementia. A friend of the family who wasn't old, who had been fit and healthy, was suddenly diagnosed with MND and sadly passed away 6 months later. I now write about the incredible work advisors do to help people ensure they are financially secure in life. Those financial plans could come crashing down, though, if people don't have protection in place, should something suddenly happen. We all want to pretend these things won't happen to us, or we won't have to think about them until much later in life. but no one knows what's around the corner, and tomorrow is not guaranteed. We have no excuse now. We've been fortunate to not have needed any insurance policy to pay out yet. We shouldn't ride our luck any longer. People's phones and pets are often better insured than they are. Advisors have, understandably, moved away from a salesperson image, and for many, protection just isn't something they deal with. Yet advisors are in a prime position to explain the importance of protection to their clients, or at least signpost them to someone who can. As policies hopefully become less complicated, more advisors will be confident to advise on them. Let's get talking about these issues. We need to put protection back on the agenda. It should never have fallen off. Thank you very much for listening. I'm sure you've heard quite enough from me today. So I will just leave you with the usual reminder that you can catch us on LinkedIn and Twitter for all the latest news, views and analysis. Sign up to our newsletter on moneymarketing.co.uk, and you can catch up with the podcast on Apple, Podbean, Spotify or directly from the Money Marketing website. Until next time, goodbye.